Iran welcomes the Arab League's decision to readmit Syria to the bloc, saying this follows Syria's great victory over terrorists. The U.S. president renews his call for a national assault weapons ban and other gun safety measures in the wake of a mass shooting in Texas that claimed 8 lives. And recession fears mounting in Germany as official data shows drops in manufacturing, energy and construction in Europe's top economy. And welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned into World News. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Iran has hailed the Arab League's decision to readmit Syria into the body 12 years after the country's suspension. The spokesman for Iran's foreign ministry says this followed Syria's great victory over terrorists and the support Syrians gave to their government. Nasser Kanani said Tehran welcomes the fact that regional countries have settled differences in a move that curbs foreign interventions. Now, the spokesman said Tehran hopes that regional countries will further strengthen cooperation based on shared interests. Earlier, Russia also welcomed the readmission, which it has called a long-awaited step. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas also commended Syria's return to the Arab League. It called on Muslim countries to strengthen bonds of friendship and counter Israel's expansionist projects. Political commentator Tim Anderson is of the opinion that Arab countries want to reassert their influence in the region in some new ways now that the war on Syria has failed.
So there are contradictions in that. There are contradictions in the Bahraini regime, the UAE, in their normalization. But at the same time, they reestablish relations with Syria. They want to be relevant. That's really what's driven this. They don't want to be left out. They see that the dirty war on Syria has failed. And all of those states want to have reassert their influence in some new ways in the new reality of the region. That's what's going on. But they can't just immediately abandon all of the relations they've had with the U.S. After all, they've acted in U.S. interests for many, many years. And it's going to be interesting to see how they try and disentangle themselves from this relationship, because, of course, the U.S. is not, it may be a declining power, but it's not harmless. It's capable of doing some real damage, particularly to its collaborators, which are seen to betray them or go in a different direction. We've seen what they've done with collaborators in many other countries in the past.
Iran's top general Mohammad Baqiri says there are new signs of a shift in the global balance of power from west to east. Oh, the chief of general staff of Iranian armed forces says the U.S. has been trying to impose itself as the absolute ruler of the world, but the new shift hints at a future that belongs to Asia. Major General Mohammad Baqiri also called for defense cooperation with Oman and invited the country to join the international marine drills Iran holds in the region. Baqiri was speaking during a meeting with his Omani counterpart, Vice Admiral Abdullah bin Hamis al-Raisi. And the Omani official said regional solidarity leads to security. He added that regional disagreements should not become a reason for foreign interventions. Well, the families of a group of Iranians captured by the Mojahedin Khaq terror organization MKO have gathered in front of the Red Cross office in Tehran. They demand the immediate release of their loved ones who have been held by the terrorists for decades.
Today is the day of International Committee of the Red Cross. On this occasion, some families have gathered here and they're demanding to see their loved ones who are trapped in the MEK in camps in Albania. And the most basic human rights of these people inside their camps is abused, and including not being able to contact the outside world, particularly the families. And they are demanding that the Red Cross would use all its capacity, trying to force Albanian government and other international bodies to try to make some connection between these people and the people inside the camps. Some of them haven't heard about their loved ones for more than 40 years now. And this is a very grave suffering. And we have tried for many years to just make contact. They just want a simple call or letter or being able to visit their loved ones. That's all. And to learn that if they are safe and sound.
The U.S. president has once again called on Congress to move to curb access to guns following the mass shooting at a mall in Texas over the weekend. Joe Biden is seeking a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Biden also called for universal background checks and an end to immunity for gun manufacturers. On Saturday, a gunman went on a shooting spree at a busy mall north of the city of Dallas, killing 8 people and injuring 7 others. This comes as reports say the social media accounts of the shooter contain hundreds of posts with racially or ethnically motivated content and violent far-right rhetoric. The reports say the Dallas resident may have been linked to a white supremacist or neo-Nazi group. Now, the UK's anti-monarchists have criticized the heavy-handed policing of King Charles III's coronation. They say there is no longer a right to peaceful protests in Britain after dozens of protesters were arrested and detained into the night. The detainees included Graham Smith, who leads the anti-monarchy group known as the Republic. In a statement, Smith said his arrest was predetermined and would have occurred regardless of any evidence or action. He added that the arrests were not about protecting people from harm, but about protecting the king from embarrassment. London's Metropolitan Police said a total of 64 arrests were made during Coronation Day protests. The detainees' charges included breach of the peace and conspiracy to cause a public nuisance.
The one-of-a-kind, multi-billion-pound coronation is finally coming to an end. A 3-day ceremony which saw King Charles III crowned along with his wife Camilla. More than 2,000 guests, including world leaders, aristocrats, and celebrities, all participated in the event. Tens of thousands of people flooded the streets in London to see King Charles III formally crowned. Thousands saw the king receiving a royal salute from members of the military in the gardens of Buckingham Palace following his coronation. The coronation of King Charles III in London's historic Westminster Abbey was the first in the United Kingdom for 7 decades. Heavy police presence overshadowed the wealthy event. The London Metropolitan Police deployed more than 11,000 officers for one of their biggest ever security operations for the day of the coronation. For many, the coronation of King Charles III was maybe a lifetime event full of joy and days-long festivities as tens of thousands turned out to catch a glimpse of the newly crowned King Charles and Queen Camilla, who rode in a state coach back to Buckingham Palace after Saturday services at Westminster Abbey. But not everyone who came to watch the multi-billion-pound ceremony was there to cheer Charles. Thousands of people poured onto the streets to protest against the antiquated monarchical system.
Not my king! Not my king! Not my king!
My king! Not my king! Not my king!
Because I don't believe in hereditary monarchy, and I think this is costing a huge amount of money when lots of people are struggling, and the economy is falling apart, and the public services are awful, and we need to invest in that and not in Charles and his big party.
London's Metropolitan Police said in total, over 60 arrests were made on Saturday for what it called offenses including breach of the peace and conspiracy to cause a public nuisance. Those detained include leader of an anti-monarchist group, the Republic. Graham Smith criticized the policing of the coronation as heavy-handed, saying the arrests were not about protecting people from harm, but about protecting the kingdom from embarrassment.
The coronation comes at a time when Britain is grappling with numerous economic woes. This includes record high inflation that has led to months of strikes and protests. With many Brits struggling to make ends meet, the government is spending taxpayer money on a multi-million pound state ceremony.
The coronation of King Charles III comes as there is no budget revealed for the historic national state occasion. Some suggest that the ceremony could cost the nation between 50 to 100 million pounds. The government has so far refused to comment on the exact cost, making the amount of public funds spent on the festivities unknown. What is known, though, is that the multi-million pound coronation falls to taxpayers to foot the bill. Not only that, the coronation comes at a time when the country is gripped with protests and strikes in a dispute with the government over pay. Since last June, a huge number of workers have walked off their jobs, including teachers, civil servants, train and bus drivers, border officials and university staff, nurses, ambulance drivers, and staff at swath of government agencies, just to express that they can't literally make ends meet. With several waves of strikes sweeping the UK, the economy has been hit harder than initially expected. The UK inflation has experienced a 40-year high. That includes food prices, with some key ingredients seeing a steep rise of up to 50%, according to some detailed government data. The situation is to the extent where many people across the country are struggling to put food at the table. Furthermore, the UK financial woes have exacerbated the economic and social inequality there. That has prompted many to question the costly pomp and pageantry associated with the state-funded ceremony. A survey prior to the coronation showed that most of the British people simply did not want to pay for the costly event. Instead, they wanted the coronation to be funded by the royal family itself. Anti-monarchy activists say the cost is a slap in the face for millions of people who are struggling to meet their basic needs. Yet, they have to foot the bill in the form of taxes. Maybe that's why many across Britain see the monarchy as outdated and undemocratic, saying the coronation is a celebration of hereditary power and has no place in modern society. Maybe that's why many are worried that the coronation of a 74-year-old man will indirectly result in so many people going hungry.
And now to Germany, where recession fears mount as industrial production in Europe's top economy sees an unexpected decline. Official data shows production in manufacturing, energy, and construction dropped 3.4% in March compared with the previous month. It swung from an upward increase of over 2% in February. The automotive industry was a major contributor to the recent drop. The automobile sector is a pillar of Germany's economy, and it is hammered by high energy prices following the outbreak of the war in Ukraine. Well, Kiev says Moscow has launched a massive swarm of drones at Ukrainian targets, including the capital. 60 drones were reportedly fired, 36 of them toward Kiev. Ukraine claims it shot all of them down, adding, however, that the debris hit apartments and other buildings, injuring at least 5 people. This has been the largest drone swarm by Russia in months. Moscow made the charge on the eve of the May the 9th holiday, celebrating the defeat of Nazi Germany in 1945. Many expected such an attack, which would be in response to the recent drone strike by Kiev, including the failed attempt on the Kremlin, which Russia said targeted President Putin. This is while fighting rages mainly in Kharkiv, Kherson, Odessa, and Bakhmut, with Russian forces firing rockets at Ukrainian positions. Well, the fifth edition of export capabilities of the Islamic Republic of Iran has kicked off in the Iranian capital of Tehran. Hundreds of foreign investors from different countries have participated in this year's event to assess opportunities for cooperation with Iranian companies. Mahdi Abbasian brings us more.
The fifth Export Potential Exhibition of the Islamic Republic of Iran, dubbed Iran Expo 2023, has officially kicked off in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi inaugurated the exhibition. During his speech, Raisi hailed Iran's progress despite sanctions, saying Iranian scientists and industrialists have managed to make great achievements. He also said that the Iranian government has set a 40-year record exporting over $50 billion worth of commodities since August 2021, when his government came into power. Since the early hours of the opening, the exhibition salons were packed with investors and business people from every corner of the world. Representatives from 60 foreign countries have participated in this year's event. The UAE, Pakistan, Russia, Turkey, and China are among the countries taking part in the exhibition. There are a total of 750 domestic companies and representatives at the event that have put their products on display in different industrial, medical, and petrochemical areas, as well as home appliances and food industries. The fifth Export Potential Exhibition of the Islamic Republic of Iran showcases the trade and investment opportunities in the country for foreign businessmen and entrepreneurs. The exhibition will be held from May 7th to 10th. Iranian officials have estimated that the expo will help add more than $2 billion to the country's export revenues.
Iran Expo 2023 provides a platform, a perfect platform for investment in non-oil industries of Iran. And the presence of thousands of people in this year's event highlights this fact. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
And with that brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Economic divide.
The U.S. debt ceiling has turned into a crisis again. This could be a partisan issue, which most likely it is. But at the same time, what is the U.S. doing when it comes to bringing this to the last minute and pushing the envelope? That's going to be the topic of this edition of the program. Coming up in today's program, these are some of the highlights that we'll be covering. First, when it comes to the U.S. debt ceiling and how that is panning out. Well, it's a bipartisan issue. We're going to explore that. Government shutdown is one of the consequences that may happen, and that, as a result, would be a risk to all Americans. Okay, so that's how serious this is when it comes to the debt ceiling. Now, there have been previous debt ceiling increases in the U.S. on multiple occasions. However, this time around, we're looking at $31.4 trillion for the year 2023. A quick question that comes about here, which we'll explore, is payback even possible? Then we'll take a look at the actual debt. The U.S. national debt is an epic figure. And by some accounts, even military personnel have said it's a threat to U.S. national security. And it risks a default. Will that happen?
House of Representatives has passed a bill that would boost the U.S.'s $31.4 trillion Fed debt ceiling in exchange for slashing government spending, including programs championed by the Democratic President Joe Biden, passed by a party-line vote of 217 to 215, with four Republicans breaking ranks. The bill now heads to the Democrat-controlled Senate, where it stands little chance of passing. Biden has already threatened to veto the bill, which includes spending cuts that he previously called irresponsible.
We've done our job. I've sat down with the president on February 1st. He ignored the rest of the time. He treats it just like the border. He wants to ignore it and thinks it goes away. That doesn't work in America. He's putting the American economy in jeopardy by his lack of action. Now he should sit down and negotiate. We passed this early. We are in April, way ahead of the debt limit. We are the only party to take fiscal action in a sound mind that would lift the debt limit so we wouldn't have economic damage.
The U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has warned that the failure by Congress to raise the government's debt ceiling and the resulting default would trigger an economic catastrophe. The debt ceiling, also known as the debt limit, is the amount the U.S. can legally borrow to fulfill its financial obligations. When it comes to the U.S. national debt, the debt ceiling has been increased multiple times, the most recent one to have been risen to $31.4 trillion in December 2021. A failure to raise the limit would see the U.S. default. Lifting the debt ceiling was once a fairly routine vote. Since 1960, Congress has raised the ceiling 78 times, 49 times under Republican presidents, and 29 times under Democratic presidents. The debt ceiling was last raised in 2021 to $31.4 trillion, where it currently stands. Big increases in recent years have come not only from spending to combat COVID-19 and on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, but also to cover the rising medical costs of an aging population and to fund all other services that government provides. The U.S. national debt has reached such epic proportions that it is said to be the biggest threat to U.S. national security. At the same time, one of the biggest U.S. spending is on its military, which is more than the next nine top spending countries combined. Financial markets are growing increasingly concerned about the standoff, sending the cost of insuring exposure to U.S. debt to its highest level in a decade, with financial analysts warning about the increasing risk of a default.
It's time now for the social media post on this program. There was a lot of bickering when it came on this topic, taking a look at the posts that we were perusing through. Anyways, first up, as total debt surpasses $31.4 trillion, the current statutory limit, the Treasury is undertaking a series of bookkeeping maneuvers to disguise new borrowing and to keep the government operating. Next, this person said, I can't believe I'm writing this, but the U.S. Treasury will be in the market borrowing $207 billion today, of which it listed some items like $60 billion of 44-day cash management bills or $70 billion of four-week T-bills. Obviously, a lot of borrowing going on there, taking a look at this list. We then go to a website, the fake fight over the debt ceiling was the title. The debt ceiling forces us to talk about the proper role of government, but nobody wants to do that. We figure we'll break this down further. Democrats, of course, are not even pretending to rein in government and simply propose new spending. And then it says that's a big problem because our $31 trillion national debt has reached unprecedented levels and does need to be limited and then reduced. Next, we go to this post where it says the debt ceiling, America's budget crisis of its own creation. The dispute over U.S. national debt is not one of economics, but of gridlocked partisan politics. All right, those were some of the social media posts there. Let me introduce our guest for this first segment of our Q&A. First, we're going to bring in Martin Safe. He's a former managing editor and at International Affairs and a former chief news analyst at United Press International. Martin Safe, welcome to Economic Divide. This is a common scenario when it comes to the debt ceiling and the showdown that basically it seems like it's a showdown between the parties. Republicans have refused to increase the U.S. debt ceiling, and that's a limit on the amount of money Washington can borrow. And you need, obviously, to have the U.S. president consent to the large spending cuts, which, obviously, he has so far rejected. But then, at the end, you always get this increase one way or another. At least that's what history has proven. Why does the U.S. find itself in this position time and again?
I think the ultimate reason, unfortunately, is that we have a 1789 constitution, a constitution that is now almost a quarter of a millennium old, and we have not adapted it for the 21st century. And in American society today, that atmosphere of bipartisanship and statesmanship is breaking down. And that is the real problem. It is breaking down. You have to have cooperation to make the system work. And the cooperation is not there, certainly on the Republican side at the moment.
Okay, let's bring in now Richard Black. Richard Black is the former state senator of Virginia, and he's also a Republican politician. Richard Black, welcome to Economic Divide. You know, taking a look at this debt ceiling, I don't want to say debacle, but it really should be very simple. You have a budget that gets passed, voted on, and if you go, you have to act and spend according to that budget. But time and again, the U.S. president or its administration goes beyond that or reaches that limit. It sounds like there's not only oversight, but obviously there is, but by design, it's moving forward that way. What if the U.S. can't pay this huge debt of over $31 trillion? And what would be the impact on the U.S. economy?
Well, it's a very difficult issue. There really are two primary points. One is that the United States dollar is the world's reserve currency. Because so much of the world's trade is settled in dollars, it makes it somewhat of an essential currency, at least for the time being. It may not retain that status, but as long as it does, the United States can literally create $1 trillion out of thin air. Now, that can only go on for so long, but it may still be quite a while before that ends. Now, the other part of the question you asked deals with, you know, does it ever reach a point where it simply can't be paid? The more that you accumulate debt without having real production to back it up, the more seductive this becomes. And you see this constant ratcheting up and increase in debt. And right now the debt is very, very high. And that exposes us to risks of inflation. And it also puts pressure on the world's economy.
Time now for the Info News section of the program. As usual, we have picked four topics for you with an economic flavor. First up, we take a look at UK's economy. We've taken a look at UK's economy quite a bit in the past 6 months. But this one, we had to bring to you because it's quite unbelievable. This is what the Bank of England has said, which is quite harsh, the message that it had for the Brits. It said that Britons need to accept that they are poor. That's what they have said. This is while UK's finance minister has said this was a very difficult period, as prices of items like milk, sugar, and olive oil were around 40% higher than a year ago.
We understand the pressure that everyone is facing as a result of the increase in food prices, for example, that we see today. But the one thing they would not want us to do is to take a decision on pay that means that we entrench high inflation and we're still having these same bitter arguments in a year's time.
Next up, Russia-Iran de-dollarization. The next topic is just that, something we focused on quite a bit. Again, some of these news items need to be reintroduced in order to see what's going on with the latest. Here, Iran and Russia, they're taking the last steps toward integrating their economic banking systems. Iran's Shatab and Russia's Mir networks, these are the financial payment systems, they have started their joint financial activities on a trial basis. Really looking forward to seeing how that is going to pan out. All right, sanctions is up next in terms of anti-Russia sanctions that the West has executed against Russia. The Russian finance minister has said that these Western sanctions, they have actually boomeranged. That is said quite a bit when it comes to sanctions. And, of course, Russia and Iran have been at the receiving end. The EU's short-sighted policy is hurting the bloc more than Moscow. And he went on to say Western restrictions have diminished global confidence in the U.S. dollar and also the euro, adding, when Western countries introduce new packages of restrictions, we take anti-sanctions measures, and we see that we are succeeding. Finally, look at Israel's economy and see how they're doing with the protests that are still going strong after, we've lost count here. I think it's 4 months now that people there in the occupied territories are coming out and protesting against Netanyahu and his so-called judicial reforms. Moody's credit rating agency has cut Israel's sovereign credit rating, lowering Israel's outlook to stable from positive. It said the planned reforms could weaken Israel's institutions. The Israeli finance minister, however, had another take on it. All right, those were the topics that we picked.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
in-depth session is upon us. The U.S. government has hit its $31.4 trillion debt ceiling. That has triggered fears of a nasty fallout for Americans. Well, here are some of the facts in this in-depth section behind the debt ceiling crisis. First up, as the national debt has soared, the U.S. Treasury Department has had to borrow more money to pay for government spending. That's the definition of it. The legislative curb on this borrowing is known as the debt ceiling. National debt soaring is another way of describing government spending. Then we move on to what the Treasury Department does in terms of spending. Well, it spends the maximum amount authorized under the ceiling, but Congress must decide to suspend or to raise the limit on borrowing. All right. Now, here's a look at how, irrespective of who's been in the White House, the U.S. debt has increased dramatically as you progress from the year 1981 all the way through the year 2022. No matter who's been in office, the debt ceiling has increased. Let's move on to the next total national debt and the debt ceiling. We've mentioned this figure before, September 2021, where the debt went, where it was at $28.5 trillion. It went all the way up to almost $31.5 trillion, which is where we stand. And that is where, obviously, the U.S. public debt is subject to its limit. All right, the next graph, a Moody's analysis, is what we're going to look at, which said that GOP spending cuts in a debt ceiling increase and the repercussions of it. Well, 2.6 million jobs, okay, that's a lot. Loss per day, $300 million. GDP loss, 0.3% of the U.S.'s GDP. Layoffs, now these are federal work layoffs, federal workers, 1 million, okay? And then you have one of the most important ones that could be impacted or will be impacted, and that's military staff salaries that are not going to get paid. And obviously, that's going to affect the U.S.'s security. Okay? So how serious of an issue this is. Then we move on to how the U.S. government has run a deficit. This is important because, again, why do they keep going above what they have to spend? How much money are we talking about? It's $1 trillion on average that the government spends more based on the budget that they pass. It's not just a matter of $100 million or $50 million. $1 trillion more. And obviously that's something that has been going on, but some say it's not sustainable. And it means that they spend more money than they receive in taxes and other revenue. And to make up the difference, needs to continue to borrow. That's right. You guessed it right. Let's find out what our guests think. Martin Safe rejoins us. He's a former managing editor at International Affairs, also a former chief news analyst at United Press International. All right, Martin Safe, welcome back to Economic Divide. When you take a look at how the U.S. national debt has increased multiple times over the, obviously, years and decades, really, the most recent one, $31.4 trillion, December 2021 or January 2022, hasn't the U.S. debt reached a point, the question being that the figure is so high that, you know, can they ever pay it back? I mean, what if it defaults? What would be the impact on the U.S. economy, do you think?
If there is a default, it will be for the first time in U.S. history. It will be devastating to America's credibility in the world. It will probably cause a crash on Wall Street, such as we have not seen in almost a century since 1929. The results would be catastrophic. And it would throw the American economy and American society into chaos. And privately, a lot of Republicans realize this, but publicly they are cowards, and the Republicans are not certain they can defeat him in 2024. So they want to discredit him politically, and they also believe that if there is an economic recession, even if their policies cause it before 2024, they can blame the president and the Democrats as the party in office for that happening. So it's a very risky and irresponsible policy. It is not a national policy. It is not a patriotic policy in U.S. terms, but they wanted to simply get back into power.
All right. Thank you for that, Martin Safe. Let's bring back Richard Black, former state senator of Virginia and Republican politician. Richard Black, welcome back to Economic Divide. The U.S. national debt, it has reached such epic proportions. We need to have you put things into perspective for us because, on the one hand, you have not only economists, but also more importantly, you have some Army officials saying that that's the biggest threat to U.S. national security. At the same time, you have the U.S. that spends so much on its military, more than the next nine top spending countries combined. Can you please put that into perspective for us?
Yes. The United States military budget is gargantuan. We have a budget that is 12 times as much as Russia's military budget. Right now, the U.S. spends three times as much as China. Our military presence across the globe is clearly excessive. What are we doing in the Middle East? Why do we have troops in the Middle East? We didn't have that when I was a colonel in the Pentagon. Things were very calm and peaceful over there, and since then we've had enormous military engagements there.
Lawmakers don't raise the nation's borrowing limit by June, the federal government runs the risk of defaulting on its debt obligation. That would be catastrophic for the economy, which would put millions of jobs in jeopardy. Investors are demanding historically high yields for U.S. Treasury notes that mature in July. That is when the U.S. will default on its debt if no legislative action is taken. When yields on shorter-term bonds exceed those of longer-term bonds, it's often a sign that bad economic times are ahead.
On one hand, it looks like the Fed can continue raising rates or at least raise 25 bips in May, which is what the market is expecting, and that's where the consensus view is. On the other hand, of course, we have this banking crisis, which is causing stress in the financial system, and we are seeing signals that credit may be tightening. So I think what is most likely to happen is that the Fed is going to raise this 25 bips, because that's also what they have been communicating for a while indirectly. And then they're likely to pause and see how the inflation evolves and whether we get the kind of decline in inflation that is expected, that the Fed is expecting. I think the big disconnect right now in the market is that how long the Fed stays at current levels and how soon they are going to cut interest rates. And I think to that extent, what the Fed is saying that no cuts in 2023 and stay at current high levels. Where
the last prolonged standoff over the debt limit in 2011 led to a downgrade of the U.S. credit rating, which shook financial markets and raised borrowing costs. Some Republicans say the current bill does not do enough to cut the deficit. In 2011, a debt ceiling standoff led to credit rating agency Standard & Poor's downgrade of U.S. debt from the highest possible status, AAA, to AA+. During the last fiscal year, the federal government spent more on interest payments than transportation, housing, or food, and nutrition services combined. In the final quarter of 2022, paid a record $213 billion in interest, up from $63 billion during the same period from the year before. It now seems that the U.S. debt has reached a point that it can never pay it back. About 75% of it is owned either by domestic or foreign investors, including foreign nations. An actual default would be much worse. Not only would the U.S. likely be downgraded again, but government workers and Social Security recipients, among many others, would go unpaid.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matti Apposyan. Surpassing the debt ceiling is another way of saying I have spent too much and hence I need more money. As careless as that may sound, the U.S. has time and again breached its debt limit. And here are some more facts on the repercussions. A downgrade by credit rating agencies is not far off the mark, something that has happened before. This incurs increased borrowing costs for businesses and homeowners. Consumer confidence gets impacted, which could lead the economy into recession.
A default on our debt would produce an economic and financial catastrophe. many of your residents could ultimately lose their jobs. Household payments on mortgages, auto loans, and credit cards would rise, and American businesses would see credit markets deteriorate.
Goldman Sachs has a more dire prediction of what would happen if the debt limit is breached. It said it would halt about one-tenth of U.S. economic activity. If that happened, this would cause the loss of 3 million jobs. Then comes the impact on interest rates, which would be catastrophic, raising the national debt by $850 billion. This would divert taxpayer money away from things like infrastructure, education, and healthcare. Our final question would be, could breaching the U.S. debt ceiling bring down other markets? First, the U.S. dollar standing would take a severe hit, impacting global financial markets. The creditworthiness of U.S. Treasury securities has long bolstered demand for U.S. dollars, contributing to their value and status as the world's reserve currency. Any hit to confidence in the U.S. economy, whether from default or the uncertainty surrounding it, would cause investors to sell U.S. Treasury bonds and thus weaken the dollar. That does it for this Quick Take section.
When it comes to the U.S. debt ceiling, as of the recording of this program, which was on May 1st, Labor Day, the U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has said that the U.S. President Joe Biden should, quote, sit down and negotiate. Well, this came after the House passed his debt ceiling bill, which would raise the national borrowing limit, but it's only in conjunction with drastic spending cuts. Well, the deeper issue here is not that, but why the U.S. creates money without any backing to cover spending that wasn't in the budget in the first place, while subjecting Americans and even the world financial markets to U.S.'s party wrangling. From me, Kovit Hathaway, and the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss. Ya sari'a rida, ighfir li man la yamliku illa ad-du'a, fa innaka fa'alun lima tasha'a. Dear listeners, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. The last part where it says, Ya sabigh an-ni'am, ya dafi' an-niqam. O fountain of the blessings, O repeller of the adversities, Ya nur al-mustawhishina fi al-dhulam. O the light of those who are lonely in darkness, Ya aliman la yu'allam. O knower who was never taught, صلي على محمد وآل محمد. Bless Muhammad and his progeny. وافعل بما أنت أهله.
do with me what is worthy of you. وصلى الله على رسوله والأئمة الميامين من آله وسلم تسليما كثيرا. And Allah bless His Messenger and holy Imams of His progeny and give them abundant peace. Dear listeners, this is the last phrase, last part of the Divine Kumail supplication that we are going to discuss. Now, in the previous parts, it was mentioned that the name of the Almighty Allah is remedy. يَا مَنْ إِسْمُهُ دَوَى. And now, some names of the Almighty Allah are mentioned. يَا سَابِغَ النِّعَمْ يَا دَافِعَ النِّقَمْ. O fountain of blessings, O repeller of the adversities. يَا نُورَ الْمُسْتَوْحِشِينَ فِي الظُّلَمْ. O the light of those who are lonely in darkness. About the fact that Allah's names are remedies, the ascetic, the righteous servants have mentioned some points. Some of them suggest that this name means the same recorded names which have various benefits and impressions. One of their advantages is that when the supplicant calls his Lord with his special names, he would answer the supplicant. The Holy Quran states, وَلِلَّهِ الْأَسْمَاءُ الْحُسْنَى فَادْعُوهُ بِهَا. And Allah's are the best names, therefore call on Him thereby. When the poor servant raises his hand to the Lord, hoping for His attention, and calls with a painful heart and sincere tongue, among the people or in his own privacy, O Allah, O the Merciful, O the Generous, O Lord, and other names of the Almighty Allah, it is way too impossible from a generous hearer not to respond to him. The traditions state and suggest that Allah's names are equal with an infallible imam, or a perfect human that is the manifestation of the meaning and concept of the names. So, if anyone with a pain, with sincere heart, resorts to them, he would be healed. In fact, by resorting to the perfect individuals, we can get perfection and prosperity, and we can be saved from disbelief, moral and practical vices.
Readily please forgive one who owes nothing but supplications to you. You do what you will. Oh, he whose name is the remedy and whose remembrance is a sure cure for all ailments, and obedience to whom makes one self-sufficient. Have mercy on one whose only asset is hope, and whose only armor is weeping. O he who perfected all bounties, and who wards off all misfortune. O light who illuminates those who are in darkness. O omniscient, who knows without learning, bless Muhammad and the progeny of Muhammad, and do unto me in accordance with that which befits you.
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
In fact, dear listeners, the names of the Almighty Allah and mentioning them before our supplications, they are so important that when the Quran says لِلَّهِ الْأَسْمَاءُ الْحُسْنَى, Allah's are the best names, by resorting to the perfect individuals who are equal with the Allah's names, we can get perfection and prosperity, we can be saved from disbelief, and in fact, in reality, a perfect human is Allah's exalted names that is the center of the world. Just as it is stated about the 12th Imam, Al-Hujjat ibn al-Hasan, وَهُوَ الَّذِي بِبَقَائِهِ بَقِيَةِ الدُّنْيَا. He is the one who the existence of the world is related to his existence. وَبِيُمْنِهِ رُزِقَ الْوَرَى. Humans obtained their sustenance by his blessing. وَبِوُجُودِهِ ثَبَتَتِ الْأَرْضُ وَالسَّمَاءُ. And the stability of the heavens and the earth is based on him. Consequently, the lover is familiar with the beloved's name and goes to his presence, referring to this name. He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, cures the pains by his mercy, and nothing in the world is sweeter than saying his names and hearing it. O Lord, we are poor servants who are coming to you, not bringing anything worthy of your presence. Have mercy upon us until all our sins are pardoned and our path is opened to your paradise. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.